Bob, do you have another thought to add while the band is coming up?
This afternoon, the funeral services will take place in the White House at 4 o'clock. And it'll be only for such officials and friends as can be accommodated in the East Room, overlooking the lawns and gardens of the White House grounds. President Truman, of course, will be there. And officiating at the White House service will be Bishop Angus Dunn of the Washington Episcopal Cathedral. He's going to be assisted by the Reverend Howard S. Wilkinson of St. Thomas Church and the Reverend John G. McGee of St. John's. The President had attended Inauguration Day services at St. John's across the Lafayette Square from the White House until the war years. Now that band is coming ever closer, and let us pick up some of that music. The Navy band passing by just now, the muffled drums. Now immediately below us, following the Navy band, companies of Marines. Photographers hastening along the street, snapping pictures. Photographers lined along this balcony on top of the Apex building. People standing across the street on the balcony of the National Gallery. Immediately behind these companies of Marines come companies of sailors. The caisson is not yet pulled into sight. It hasn't entered Constitution Avenue from Delaware Avenue as yet. So while these companies of Marines pass by, we are going to fill with a short musical interlude.
We return you now to President Roosevelt's funeral procession and Bob Evans.
This is Bob Evans again speaking from the apex building at the intersection of Pennsylvania and Constitution Avenues. Immediately below us now, companies of Coast Guard men are passing by. And just now crossing Pennsylvania Avenue, perhaps there's quite a distance to cover in Washington, the city of magnificent distances. The caisson is only now crossing Pennsylvania Avenue on Constitution. It perhaps is fully a quarter of a mile away from where we stand, but we see it quite clearly as it comes into view. Motorcycle police stretched along, riding their motorcycles on each side of the caisson, drawn by its horses. It's still too early to distinguish just how many horses are drawing the caisson. Coast Guard companies immediately below us. Now we see five women who represent the armed forces branches coming up. Navy, Coast Guard, Marines, and Army. And immediately behind these leaders, there is a company of WAC. Behind the company of WAC, company of Marines, women Marines, then women sailors. It's still a little early to distinguish whether they're Coast Guard or Navy sailors. They are Navy. Navy, and just behind them, a company of Coast Guard women. The Coast Guard women are immediately in front of the caisson. There are 10 motorcycle policemen on each side of the caisson. We can see the heads of the white horses bobbing, flashing, proceeding at that very slow pace. This slow pace of the procession, of course, doesn't exceed at the most 3 miles an hour, marching very slowly. The people, too, on the sidewalks are marching along simultaneously, keeping pace with the companies of Marine, the company of Marine women who are passing beneath us right now, and also quite a large crowd following along the sidewalk. Immediately back of the standing spectators and keeping pace with the pace of the horses drawing the caisson. It's coming ever closer now. We can distinguish now that there are seven white horses, six horses actually drawing the caisson, and the leader riding is the white horse, standing also on a white horse, standing just immediately to the left and slightly ahead of the six horses which draw the carriage. The flag-draped coffin, completely covered with the American flag, the coffin on the black-covered caisson, the wheels with their brass hubs sparkling in the sunlight, the wheels turning so slowly that you can distinguish each spoke as it turns. Horses with their polished harness, ridden by three horsemen. Horsemen are riding the left horses, the right horses free. Now we can distinguish the fact that there are eight motorcycle police on each side of the caisson. Immediately in back, the American flag and the President's flag, carried by bearers, marching stiffly. The caisson, as I said, is entirely draped in black. And then, of course, immediately behind that come the cars of the family. Cliff, what do you see?
Bob, I'd just like to remark on the fact that on each side of the caisson, there are two representatives, two non-commissioned officers from each branch of the service, two Coast Guard men, two sailors, two Army men, and two Marines. Those men will be the only pallbearers in Washington. President Roosevelt is taking his last trip through Washington now, and if you haven't heard it yet, you might be interested in a brief description of his last resting place. It'll be in a sunny garden in Hyde Park. It's surrounded by a 100-year-old hedge on the Hyde Park estate that he loved so much and to which he hoped someday to return. The 10-foot hedge is visible from both the Roosevelt Memorial Library and the ancestral home of Mr. Roosevelt. It's located between them, and a connecting roadway skirts one side. The grave itself is being prepared in the middle of a 1/4-acre garden plot. One side of the enclosure is all roses, with more than 25 beds growing there. At two ends, there are banks of flowers, where pansies and daffodils are blooming even now. And now for a further description of the parade as it passes up and turns up 15th Street at the end of Constitution Avenue, we switch you now to Arthur Godfrey.
From my position here on top of the roof of the Riggs Bank building at the corner of 15th and Pennsylvania Avenue, northwest, I've just held the microphone out over the roof so that you could hear the music the Marine Band was playing as it rounded this corner, coming north on 15th Street and turning left west into Pennsylvania Avenue. And they are now, as you hear the drum beats in the background, approaching the eastern end of the White House grounds. And they are followed by a battalion of midshipmen, marching slowly to that slow, measured, meticulously slow beat of the procession. There's the music again. Is now passing under the shade trees, the gloriously beautiful shade trees that almost hide Pennsylvania Avenue from view from this point at the western end of the White House grounds. And the companies of midshipmen, evenly paced, spaced between the band and our point, have just passed, and here come the first of the armored cars and trucks that were described to you farther on down the line. From our point here, we're looking south toward the Washington Monument that stands magnificently straight up over the Treasury Building, which is right across the street from us. And just a little to the right and low down on the southern horizon is the dome of the beautiful Jefferson Memorial, which our late beloved president had a great deal to do with building 3 or 4 years ago. It was just recently completed, you know, and is Washington's newest beautiful monument. It's down there on the tidal basin where those cherry blossoms are. And over to our left on the east side of 15th Street, as far down as we can see toward the Washington Hotel, the people from all over this part of the country who have come to pay their last respects to the man who was their leader, their commander-in-chief, and their friend, stand 15, 20, in some places 30 or 40 deep to get a glimpse and pay their last respects. And it is fitting that this procession should be as, what shall I say, magnificent is the word. It's so hard to find adjectives to describe the funeral procession of your idol. But it is a wonderful tribute that we are paying to them here today, insofar as the procession is concerned, and the people who have turned out. And overhead just a moment ago, there were 24 B-24 Liberator bombers flew across as slowly as it was possible for them to fly. And higher, at a still higher altitude, and behind them were squadrons numbering 50 or 60 P-47 fighters flying just as slowly as they could. And all along Pennsylvania Avenue, as the procession turns to the west toward the White House and is nearing its end, the people stand 4, 5, and 6 deep on both sides of the street, all the way up to the corner of the White House grounds. There are no spectators on the south side of Pennsylvania Avenue directly in front of the White House grounds, only the infantrymen standing at parade rest with their bayoneted rifles and their steel helmets, been standing there already for an hour or more. The procession of armored cars is still on Pennsylvania Avenue in front of us, passing slowly up toward the White House. The only part of the White House we can see from here is the famed East Portico, which is just opposite the Treasury Building and looks, in fact, like a miniature Mount Vernon through the trees here with its tall pillars, gleaming white marble there in this early April sun. If it wasn't... Well, it is. It's a beautiful day today, a beautiful day. The sun is shining warmly. The humidity is high, but no one seems to mind. And there's just a suggestion of a faint April breeze in the air, which helps to pass off that humidity and make it more comfortable. And here come the big field pieces now of the artillery, drawn by vast trucks holding the crews of the guns, containing the crews of the guns, moving ever so slowly, now coming around the bend to the left from 15th Street, turning into Pennsylvania Avenue. And these crowds and crowds of people standing mutely, quietly, dazed expressions on their faces, still unable to believe. And I know that lots of them feel just as I do. We just won't believe until the caisson itself passes us. And overhead, here comes that fleet of B-24 Liberator bombers again. 5, 10, 15, 20 of them. Perhaps you can hear them in the microphone. They're almost overhead now. And at not more than 2,500 feet or so. Can you hear them? Those pilots have those planes throttled back just as far back as they dare. Excuse me. To maintain flying speed, just barely moving through the skies overhead. It is impossible to tell you from this vantage point anything about the extreme length of this procession, and I know it must be 1, 2, or 3 miles in length, because as Bob Evans and Cliff Allen told you, the caisson itself didn't pass the Apex Building, which is a good mile and a half or 2 miles from here, until just a few moments ago. And the first 3 blocks of the parade have just now passed this Riggs Bank Building where we stand. Across the street, as I said, oh, here come the P-47 fighters. Maybe you can hear them. They're at a much higher altitude than the bombers were, and flying a great deal faster, of course. But there are about twice as many of these as there were bombers. Can you hear them? Into the west, down Pennsylvania Avenue. Pennsylvania Avenue, as perhaps all of you know who've ever been here, of course, but those of you who've never been to Washington perhaps don't know, but Pennsylvania Avenue, the famous avenue in Washington, takes a funny sort of a course. It begins way up there on the eastern end of Georgetown, in a sort of northeasterly direction, and then bends back again toward the east, coming due east, and then when it gets here to this corner where we're standing at 15th and Pennsylvania, it ends right here temporarily, and you swing around to the right and go down past G Street, past F Street, and then turn left, and there the avenue starts again, two blocks farther on down, 2.5 blocks farther, and then continues on east to the Capitol. That is why we have this bend here where the procession is moving ever so slowly around this great wide turn at the intersection of Pennsylvania Avenue, 15th Street, and what is called New York Avenue, which would ordinarily be the extension of Pennsylvania as it comes in here. New York Avenue begins right here. I see one of the enlisted men has climbed himself up into a tree across the road so that he can, across the street here, so that he can see better. It is amazing when you look out from this height. I've never noticed this before, although at several times it's been my privilege to broadcast descriptions of parades and processions of one kind and another here, but I've never noticed before how green are the roofs around me. The trees and the grass on the lawn of the Treasury Building and the beautiful lawn in the White House grounds and the roofs of these buildings, this one we're standing on, the old bank across the street, the roofs of the old hotels are all a green, about the same color. It struck me unusually forcefully just now. That Jefferson Memorial, our president, our late beloved Franklin Delano Roosevelt, is dead. But everywhere you look in Washington, wherever you will go, in this generation and in 10 generations hence, you will see the marks of the works, of his great works during his 12 years here. And the thing that stands out now is the dome, the beautiful white marble dome of that Jefferson Memorial, down there among the cherry trees on the tidal basin, just to the south and a little west of the Washington Monument. The towers up above us pointing into the blue sky. You know, it is a strange feeling that grips me now. It was just a little over 12 years ago, just a few days more than 12 years ago, that it was my privilege on the 4th of March in 1933 to stand at a microphone on the south side of the east wing of the Capitol on Capitol Hill to describe for our listeners over the shortwave radio in England and France and Europe the inaugural ceremonies at the first inauguration of Franklin Delano Roosevelt as president, a little over 12 years ago today. And since that time, it's been my privilege to describe a portion of parades and welcoming processions as he's come back triumphantly from this election and that tour and this campaign and that one, and to see that wonderful smiling face who seemed to see everybody in the crowd. You always felt that he never missed looking directly at you. That was part of his charm. Then to think that in a few moments, the coffin bearing his body on the caisson will draw him past us here for the last time as it goes to the White House for the simple religious funeral ceremonies that will be conducted at 4 o'clock this afternoon in the East Room. I remember that day in March in 1933, there was an icy fear clutched at me, caused by the worry that I would not be able to do justice to the description of the ceremonies then going on so that our listeners in Europe would get a good picture. And today that icy fear is there again, but I'm not worried so much about not being able to describe it to you. That isn't what makes me feel like that today. I just can't believe that this is the last time that we shall be here to watch a procession in which Franklin Delano Roosevelt takes part. While we're waiting here for just a moment, suppose we pause for station identification, and then I'll be back with you. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. This is Arthur Godfrey again, standing on the roof of the Riggs Bank building at the corner of 15th and Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest in Washington, D.C., right opposite the Treasury. At that spot in the line of the procession where the procession makes a left turn to the west after having come north on 15th Street from Constitution Avenue. Here it turns left and goes west on Pennsylvania Avenue toward the White House. You can't see any of the White House from here at all, as I mentioned a little while ago, except a small portion through the trees of the east portico. The White House itself is hidden completely by the trees, which are now in almost full leaf because of the unseasonably very warm March that we had. I can see the top of the State House, just the top of it above the trees. And now here is, looks to me like a Navy band from here, coming up 15th Street. I'm going to turn the microphone so that you can hear the music. Just now approaching the turn. The first line, the first trombones in the band are just now ready to make the left turn. Drums are wrapped in black crepe and are muffled, as you can hear. And the pace of the musicians is so slow. And behind them, these are Navy boys, blue jackets, all blue jackets. There isn't a chief petty officer's uniform among them. They're all in a blue jacket uniform. All of the musicians, first class, or perhaps just apprentice seamen. I see some one-stripe apprentice seamen down there. They're followed by a battalion of Marines. Approaching the eastern end of the White House grounds, and down there on Pennsylvania Avenue, beneath us, are company after company of United States Marines, marching oh so slowly in their green-gray uniforms at left shoulder arms. And behind these Marines, on 15th Street, just about to make the turn, I see companies of blue jackets in blue jackets landing force uniform. with white leggings and belts and rifles and bayonets. And the first company of blue jackets is now turning into Pennsylvania Avenue, going west. They have about two more blocks to go till they get to the White House. And overhead, a lone, twin-motored, twin-tailed ship, airplane, which I don't recognize. I imagine it's a photographer's plane going by. And it's very interesting to watch the people. These people are down here stricken, genuinely stricken with grief. Nobody can believe it. It just doesn't seem possible. I don't know whether you can hear the band in the background now or not. Here come more blue jackets with chief petty officers at the head of the companies. Apprentice seamen, most of them I can see, but one little white stripe on their cuffs and the white seamen band around their shoulders. Marching, trying so hard to keep their lines absolutely straight in this very difficult, slow pace. It's a very difficult thing to do. But you can see on the face of every man an appreciation of the tribute he is paying. He's proud, proud to march here today, proud of the opportunity to be here to pay this last tribute. And way down 15th Street now, just coming around the east end of the Treasury Building, as I can see from here, are companies of wax. The first is a company of wax, followed by a company of members of the Women's Marine Corps Reserve. That's all that I can see of them at the moment. The wax are just about ready to make the left turn into Pennsylvania Avenue. And they, too, marching as stoically, with measured pace. And here, passing right in front of us, is a lady in the uniform of a captain of the waves. Do any of you know who she is? She wears the four stripes of a naval captain on her sleeve. No, that's Captain, must be Captain McAfee. That's what it must be, Captain McAfee. She is leading this contingent of the members of the Women's Reserve of the Army and the Marine Corps and the Waves and the Coast Guard. And now just coming past the Treasury, I can see the horses drawing the caisson. Flanked on either side by 3, 4, 6, 7 motorcycles, 7 mounted policemen on motorcycles. There are 2, 4, 6 white horses drawing the caisson. Flag-draped coffin resting on this caisson as it comes slowly. It's hidden by a tree now, following right in the wake of a company of members of the SPARS, the Coast Guard Women's Reserve. There are 3 horses, then 2, and then 2, with a man mounted on the horse on the left side of each couple of horses. Here is the caisson, now making the turn off of 15th Street into Pennsylvania Avenue. God give me strength to do this. these horses. Now, here's the caisson beneath us now. And there is the flag-draped coffin resting on this black caisson in a dull black. The horses with black blankets under their saddles. The horses on the right side, unmounted. The riders on the left. You'll see this in the pictorial news pictures, in the movie tone news, as I hope. And it's moving ever so slowly as the crowd stands, the waves and wax and men in uniform along the streets that salute. And most generally, folks having as tough a time as I am trying to see it. And behind us is the car bearing the successor to the late President Roosevelt, President Harry S. Truman, the man on whose shoulders now falls the terrific burdens and responsibilities that were handled so well by the man to whose body we're paying our last respects now. God bless him, President Truman. We return you now to the studio.
You now to President Roosevelt's funeral procession and Tris Coffin.
This is Tris Coffin speaking to you from just west of the White House. The stately elm trees here on the White House lawn have added a soft grandeur and a mellowness to the scene. I see before me many familiar faces, the White House secretaries and the White House secret service men and some of the colored servants. They still can't realize that the president is dead. These grounds, these rooms, are so full of the memories of him that they find it hard even now to realize that he is dead. Here are the places where the president met with Prime Minister Churchill, with Foreign Commissar Molotov, with all the people of all the worlds. And I've looked around and I've been watching the faces here, and people are just beginning to realize, I think, that President Roosevelt actually is dead, that he will not come back to these places, these rooms, these grounds that he loved so well. Before me, or right behind me a few minutes ago, I noticed two women softly crying. And I've seen the same thing happen to the faces of the men and women standing on the White House grounds. They've seemed to stiffen up and then perhaps droop a little bit. Now the caisson is moving into the White House, and the White House grounds is just past the gateway, the flag-draped coffin, the men on horseback. And people have just almost seemed stopped breathing up there along the gateway. I notice the officers along the way, members again of the White House staff, are saluting. The cars are slowly coming in the driveway. Overhead, some planes are flying. They've dipped as they flew. The car bearing Mrs. Roosevelt has gone off to one side and is coming in separately with the White House men. I see President Truman in his car. They've cut off from the main funeral procession and are probably entering here in the West Wing. A few minutes ago, I was in the press room. The press room was desolate in there. There were a few pieces of scratch paper on the floor, and everybody had gone out One person was sitting in there, just sitting with his hands on his head. As again, as I say, people here just, I found it so hard to realize the president has died, and they've just now begun to sense it. The cars are still moving in. My view is obscured a little bit by some spectators and these elm trees, but the Khazan is being moved into the White House itself, a stately White House with a tall pillars. It's a very lovely place. I might say that for almost 24 hours, people have been standing across the street in Lafayette Park to watch the scene. They're over there now, 20 deep. They're climbing on statues. It's the park that's known to many people as Bernard Baruch Square, because that's where he so often had his talks with high officials of the government. The photographers are taking pictures now before the casket is lifted off the Khazan and brought into the White House. People are moving up close to that scene now, and it's very hard to see. Behind me, people are standing in the windows of the dignified old State Department building, a place where there's been so much pomp and ceremony, but people have thrown that aside to stand on the roofs and lean outside the windows, even climb outside on the ledges to see this sight. It's the sight of the people of Washington paying the tribute to the man whom many of them love very deeply. The casket is being brought up now. It's very difficult to see because the crowd's there. But it's going into the White House, where for the last time, President Roosevelt will be in this White House where he has lived so long and had so many triumphs. I return you now to our studios in New York.
This program has come to you from CBS World News.